Item 286, amend zoning regulations to implement the 2035 comprehensive plan through the code reconciliation project.
Colleagues, Commissioner Fritz?
287.
Sorry.
Is amend tree noise and sign regulations to effectively implement Portland City Code through the Code Reconciliation Project.
I'm going to challenge you.
Colleagues, we're here today to be briefed by staff and hear public testimony on the 2035 Comprehensive Plan, the Code Reconciliation Project. The project amends Title 33, the Zoning Code, as well as Title 11, Trees, Title 18, Noise, Title 32, Signs and Related Regulations. This is being presented to us as two ordinances, but it is in actuality just one project. We will hear public testimony today. On April 11th, the Council will deliberate and vote on the amendments that were the subject of the public hearing today, which is March 21st. We have BPS staff, Eric Engstrom and Barry Manning, to come up and introduce the hearing.
Okay.
Welcome, and thanks for being here.
Thank you, Mayor Wheeler, commissioners. My name is Eric Engstrom. I manage the Comprehensive Planning Program at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability.
I'm sorry, can I interrupt you? And I'm sorry I'm not tracking as well as I should. It's been a long day. Sue, did you read all the way through?
I did.
She vanished. You read all the way through 291?
291.
No, that's tomorrow.
It's 286 and 287.
Oh, you're right. 286 and 287. Ignore me. Continue. Eric, welcome.
Thank you. With me is Barry Manning, who's been the project manager on this code reconciliation project. After I finish introducing, he'll go through some of the details before you take public testimony. Just a reminder of the context. This is the third of three projects that are moving through council this month to help tie up loose ends and ensure a successful implementation and of the codes associated with the new comprehensive plan. You heard last week the map refinement project and had a hearing on that. Earlier, just a moment ago, you heard the transportation system plan third phase, and today we're bringing you the zoning code and other city code elements that have been traveling along with these three projects. So this is primarily focused on code amendments that tie up those loose ends, which Barry will go over. All of these projects, just as a reminder, we're trying to orchestrate them so that you get them done and make a final vote on May 24th, which is the day that the new comprehensive plan goes into effect. Last week, we had good news from the State Land Conservation and Development Commission, which upheld the plan and rejected appeals against the plan. There's still a possibility for further appeals up to the Court of Appeals, but the LCDC action is certainly good news. So again, we're trying to make sure that all these different moving parts land on May 24th and can be voted on. It's important that you adopt the amendments to the new plan actually when the plan is in effect for a variety of reasons, and so that's why it's all aiming for that day. And just one reminder that this is different than the Central City Plan, which you're going to hear, but I think you have another hearing on tomorrow, so just to make that clear.
Can I ask you a question, Eric? So last time we had a hearing, we had a lot of folks who came and testified about very specific requests. A father-daughter that wanted had an issue with respect to a house they wanted to build. I and my colleagues put forth some amendments. All of that will be taken up on May 24th?
No, we're going to come back on, I think that was held over until April, was it 4th?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, sorry, I'm just trying to keep track of this.
You held it over to a point of deliberation, which I think is in early April.
Yes.
And then you'll take your actions there in terms of amendments, and then it'll go to the final reading.
Okay, and the second question I had is, if it's April 4th or whenever when we come back, are you going to bring us a cheat sheet on that day?
Yeah, or before. For the hearing you had last week, Marty Stockton, who's the project manager there, will be delivering a summary of the testimony with our recommendations for what you do with that.
Good.
And then we'll ask you to decide on which ones you want to take forward in terms of amendments, and that deliberation would occur on the 4th.
And we'll also vote on the amendments that members of the council have put forth.
Correct. Yeah, and so today I think we were looking at deliberation on the 11th for the same day as the project you just heard about. So Barry will describe the contents of what's in this package.
Great. Thanks, Eric. Barry Manning, planning staff, project manager for the project. And thanks for hearing this afternoon. That's a little slower than I expected to be. So the Code Reconciliation Project is a large document. You've seen that, some 600-odd pages. And the purpose of it is really to reconcile zoning and other city codes with our newly adopted 2035 Comprehensive Plan Implementation Package, as Eric just mentioned, which takes place on effect on the 24th. And the reason we're doing this is, as many of you will recall, as part of the 2035 comp plan, we adopted new commercial mixed-use zones. There are all new zones that will go into effect into the commercial areas around town outside of the central city. And so those zones need to line up with other code references within the zoning code. We also adopted new campus institutional zones that don't exist right now, and those will go into effect. We need to line the codes up with that. And then we did some amendments to employment and industrial zones, and there are some relationships in the code that probably need to be addressed there as well. Again, we are cleaning up redundancies, fixing cross references, and fine-tuning. It's largely a technical package. But I would note that because the new zones, particularly the commercial mixed-use zones, are not direct replacements for the existing commercial zones, that we do have some situations where development allowances can change and we have different things that are going on there because they're not direct replacements. We tried to keep it as technical as possible. And our working mode of operation was to try to maintain the regulations and the allowances to the extent possible while applying the new zones in the context. So again, why are we doing the project? A couple of other things happened at the end of 2016. The council adopted the inclusionary housing project as well as the comprehensive plan implementation code amendments at the same time, late in 2016. Those were the comprehensive plan as a new set of codes that are going into effect in May, and the inclusionary housing was a set of regulations that applied on the existing zoning, and the two didn't quite meet up in terms of their how they would be structured in the code. So this package is trying to marry those two things as well. So we're taking the new codes, which didn't include inclusionary housing, they included some different forms of bonuses and incentives for affordable housing, and marry them to the inclusionary housing package so that it all works well together in the long run moving forward. So that's one of the key things. And then we're going to be, as this notes, the slide notes, we're going to be monitoring and making potential further calibration adjustments to inclusionary housing moving forward. That'll be brought back to council at a later date. This one right here is just implementing what we have on the books right now into the new code.
So I guess I just have to ask, given statements I made earlier this morning, you say adjustments to the inclusionary housing program if warranted. Who's deciding if warranted?
Yeah, that... I'd probably defer to Eric on that. I think that's a conversation the Bureau leadership and council are having.
Yeah, I think that both the Housing Bureau and BPS are working together to monitor what's happening under the new program, and ultimately council gets to decide if it's warranted. We're going to bring information about that eventually to council.
Okay. And again, this would be just implementing what we have on the books right now and moving forward with that. What's affected, as the mayor noted, we're amending Title 33. Most significantly, about 90% of what you have in front of you is zoning code amendments. But we are also amending Title 11, which is the tree title, Title 18, noise control, and Title 32, signs and related regulations. And the reason for that is all of those reference zoning designations within those titles. A few prior review bodies reviewed this work before it was presented to council today. The Planning and Sustainability Commission has purview over Title 33, Title 11, and Title 32, and they had a hearing and several work sessions on that before making their recommendations to you here today. The Urban Forestry Commission also has purview over Title 11, and we had several work sessions with them as well as a hearing with them before they made their recommendations. And we also presented to the Noise Review Board on Title 18 noise code amendments. So in terms of Title 33 amendments, we have multiple chapters that have minor technical corrections. Really, they're intended to provide consistency throughout the zoning code. And I'm going to recap some of the most significant amendments that might have effects on development or you might hear testimony about today. So in the multi-dwelling chapter of our zoning code, we're amending the chapter to conform with the inclusionary housing bonus approach. We are deleting the institutional residential IR zone, which is being moved to the campus institutional zones chapter, and we're amending some maps that designate the 4-to-1 FAR in the RH zone, and that's related to the map refinement project, which you heard about last week. In the new commercial mixed-use zones chapter, we are amending, again, the affordable housing bonus that exists now to be consistent with the IH approach, so we'll be implementing that with this. Projects that trigger IH or voluntarily comply would be allowed to utilize the maximum floor area ratios and height allowed through the bonuses, which was what was intended in the way the mixed-use zones were originally designed. We're also removing the reduced rent requirement from the affordable commercial bonus, which is still in the mixed-use zones, and specifying participation in a Prosper Portland program. I might make note of that in that Prosper Portland is working on administrative rules to implement the affordable commercial bonus. They're underway with that right now. They'll be returning to Planning and Sustainability Commission on the 27th of March for a briefing, and we expect the commission to probably send a follow-up letter to the council with their recommendations on that program as well. Another item of note is we're reestablishing design review for self-service storage uses in the commercial employment CE zone. That was not included in the original package, and through conversations with other bureaus and stakeholders, it was determined that it was appropriate to apply design review in that zone as well as the other ones where that use is allowed. In the employment and industrial zones, again, we're amending to conform with the IH bonus approach, and we're changing setbacks for buildings and outdoor activities adjacent to residential zones in order to reduce impacts. These are linked to removal of the buffer overlay zone, which I think you had some testimony on and some discussion about at the map refinement project hearing. We'll talk about that more today, and I expect you'll probably hear testimony about that as well. We also have a memo that outlines some of the issues associated with that, and be happy to pass that out to the council. We've made it available to the public as well. In the campus institutional zones, we're essentially amending to conform to the IH approach again in the CI2 zone. A few more to go through here. There's a lot in this package. Self-service storage. We've had a significant amount of development in the self-service storage use category around town over the last 2 to 3 years, and there's been a significant amount of testimony that was expressed at Planning and Sustainability Commission about those facilities and their impacts on the pedestrian environment, particularly in Main Street and transit-oriented locations. As a result of the testimony and deliberations at the Planning and Sustainability Commission, we're updating those. Not only are we applying design guidelines that are specific to a particular design district, if one is built in a design district, we are also updating the codes to require active uses at the ground floor when one of these facilities is built in a pedestrian or significantly transit-oriented location. And the idea here is that rather than having a completely inactive space at the ground floor that might include just storage units, we'd like to activate that space so that it better serves the community. So a portion of that ground floor area would need to be some kind of an active use, whether it was a retail use or maybe an office use or something else like that.
We can't just ban self-storage in the central city, additional self-storage.
I won't speak to what can happen in the central city. You're going to be hearing about that, I think, in tomorrow's okay. hearing. This is outside of the central city where these particular regulations would apply. So,
oh, I see.
Yeah, this is outside of.
Okay.
I should mention most of the codes that we're talking about today are applying outside of the central city. We're dealing with the central city regulations as part of Central City 2035 more exclusively. This one, there was some discussion about banning this use outright in locations outside of the city. Outside of the central city, and ultimately this compromise was settled on as a mid-ground point.
Okay.
The buffer overlay, again, I think you'll hear testimony about that today, and you may have questions about it. We're applying new setback and landscaping standards in the employment and industrial zones. They are similar to what we did in the commercial mixed-use zones, which when we adopted the 2035 comp plan amendments, we applied new buffering type standards in the base zones and removed the buffer overlay on those commercial zones. We're taking the same approach with employment and industrial zones. And so we're applying those new base zones, removing the buffer overlay from the map and code.
Barry, I want to just, because this is likely to be the one thing you hear most about in testimony, I want to just stress this point that basically this deals with landscaping and setback standards where industrial and residential properties abut. And under the old code, we had a special overlay map that came with some sets of standards that governed that interaction. The problem with the old system is that it wasn't mapped consistently in all the places where those two zones touch each other. So we're eliminating that map, and instead we're putting similar standards in the basic text of the zoning code and eliminating that map. And you're going to hear testimony concerns about the elimination of that map, but I want to stress that we're not eliminating the concept that there should be landscaping or setbacks where those two zones touch. We're just structurally changing the way we accomplish that. One of the places where we've heard a lot of testimony is in the Willamette Heights neighborhood. And in that particular situation, we also have the presence of the environmental overlay, which is really a much stronger set of regulations that will have a bigger effect on the situation there, and we're not changing that regulation at all through this package.
Only a few more to go here. We are amending several plan districts throughout the city. Plan districts, as you may be aware, regulate development in specific areas of town that have a special character or have a plan adopted for them. Central City is an example of that. Outside of the Central City, there's a plan district in Hollywood, there's one in St. John's, there's one in Gateway, etc. And most of those plan districts were based on the old zoning framework, and whether they had bonuses for housing or other allowances, those were based on a framework that didn't include the calculation oftentimes of floor area in residential developments. And that has changed as part of the new zoning framework. We're now looking at floor area as part of residential developments and calculating the whole thing. So what we've done is gone through all those plan districts and try to update and have updated them to bring them into conformance with the new system, where there were zones that did not have an offset, for instance, for inclusionary housing, as the base zones do. We've included an offset for those inclusionary housing projects. Where a plan district may have had a bonus for housing, we've generally converted those bonuses to an inclusionary housing bonus. So if you meet the inclusionary housing, you're eligible for that housing bonus. And we've adjusted the floor area ratios to conform to the new system, and overall we've maintained the height limits that were allowed in those plan districts. Most plan districts allowed more generous height limits than the base zones do. Some of them have reduced height limits, and we've maintained those throughout those. So we've really just adjusted the floor area ratios to adapt it to the IH program. There's a couple of other small changes within those plan districts. We've changed some retail size allowances to conform with the new employment and industrial zones. That's primarily in the Columbia Corridor area. We've amended references throughout, as we have throughout the code, to conform with the new commercial mixed-use zones, the C/MU. And we've revised maps to conform to recently adopted zoning or lot line changes that happened as part of that process. And those are the plan districts shown there where they're happening. So you can see they're kind of scattered all around town. The conditional use chapter, it's a large chapter, has several provisions for conditional use approvals. And throughout that chapter, we've amended it to reflect a citywide change in the way we looked at transportation approval criteria for similar types of reviews. It places a further emphasis on evaluation factors such as safety and de-emphasizes level of service as one of the particular offsetting measures there, so and evaluation measures. It's really looking to look towards a multimodal system in transportation evaluation criteria. And that's several chapters and sections within 33A15. I mentioned Title 11 earlier. We are amending it to remove tree preservation and tree density exemptions that exist now that apply to the CS and CM zones. Those zones will no longer exist in the new zoning framework. They've been replaced by CM1, CM2, CM3, and CE. There aren't really direct replacement zones. CS and CM were one of two zones of a group that allowed 100% lot coverage and did not require any landscaping, and that was one of the criteria for zones exemptions in the tree code, which would relieve them from tree preservation and tree density requirements. The new commercial mixed-use zones all require some degree of landscaping or an alternative to that landscaping. And in deliberations and discussions with the Urban Forestry Commission and the Planning and Sustainability Commission, we determined that just removing the references was the appropriate solution here, such that no zone would be exempt from the tree regulations. But the tree code still has a provision that if you have very dense development with lot coverages of 85% or greater, you have either exemptions or a reduced tree density requirement. So for very dense development, we still have some opportunity for exemption. Otherwise, we would need to look at trees in those. Title 32 signs reshuffles the way the zones apply to the new sign code or to the existing sign code. I've summarized here to suggest that CM1 zones are assigned to the smaller sign allowances. CM2, which is the medium-sized commercial mixed-use zones, are assigned to the medium-sized allowances, so that equates to the existing CS and CM zones that you may be familiar with. CM3, which is the largest scale mixed-use zone, equates to larger size sign allowances. That's very similar to the EX zone that exists now. CR, which is the commercial residential zone, is applied in very limited situations in residential areas. And the CI1 zone, which is a campus institutional one zone, which is applied also in residential situations, would have standards that relate more to the residential zones because of the residential context of those zones' placement. The one thing I'd note here about the sign regulation is that the general commercial zone ended up being rezoned to several different zones in the comp plan process. It went to CE, commercial employment. Some of them went to CM2 or CM3. Some of them went to CM1. Depending on where your existing CG zone was located, you might have been assigned a different zone in the comprehensive plan, and that would have implications on the sign allowances for that zone. In the future, there might be some changes. Existing signs would be grandfathered. I think I've got two more slides and we'll wrap up here. Title 18 noise regulations, the proposal does not change the noise regulations at all. All it does is reassign the zones to the categories within the code. The most noteworthy of the reassignments are that the CM3 zone is assigned to a commercial use category. CM3 replaces EX, and EX had been assigned to an industrial use category noise level. So this is essentially a reduction in allowed noise to the CM3 zone compared to what the EX zone has now. And it also assigns CR and the CM1 zones to the residential use category, just as we had talked about in signs. So some issues you might hear about today in testimony. We've already talked about the buffer overlay. We may hear a little bit about self-service storage. Again, that was a new issue that came up out of Planning and Sustainability Commission. I mentioned the affordable commercial space bonus and the Planning and Sustainability Commission review of that. I don't expect that you'll hear testimony today, but we will be coming back with that at a later date with their recommendations if they have any further. We are creating an administrative rule for energy-efficient buildings that would be applied in one of our existing bonuses. I don't expect to hear testimony on that, but you may hear some information about that over the coming months while you're deliberating on this. And again, tree, sign, and noise code, we may hear some testimony on that. We haven't heard a significant amount of testimony to date. So with that, I'll answer any questions you have.
Commissioner Daly.
In regards to the buffer removal, we heard hours of testimony. I'm in a time warp right now. Last week, the week before, at least a dozen of which were people concerned about this buffer overlay zone being changed or eliminated. So you're telling me that that is not going to change at all on the ground. It's just a map?
It's a strategy of how we're implementing the landscaping and setback standards in the code. In the case of the testimony you heard, most of which was from Willamette Heights, in that location, there's another zoning overlay, the Environmental Conservation Zone, that has a much broader set of regulations that will serve to protect that existing hillside and govern the development there.
I'm not quite done yet. I'm in favor of people coming here to testify for or against things we are actually doing. Having people take time out of their day and take time off work and extend these extraordinarily long meetings to testify against things that we actually aren't going to do is frustrating, and I'm just wondering where in the process did that miscommunication happen, or where was the missed opportunity for that neighborhood to actually get informed about what was really happening?
I think this is something that there's been some communication throughout the project, including at the Planning Commission level. I would say this is a sufficiently complex and thick package that there's room for misinterpretation.
Yes.
And so we've tried to correct any misunderstandings about the effect. There is a code change, so I think the bottom line may be that people are just concerned that they don't know how it could change.
But shouldn't there be somewhere for them to get that information instead of coming to council to sign up to give testimony, which is not actually pertinent to what's going to happen?
Yes, and we've tried to provide information, and our planner, our district planning group, who is more daily engaged with folks who are calling in. We have a helpline that was published in the public notice,
okay.
And we've had a lot of phone conversations.
I would love to help you promote that helpline through my office and through the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. I am both self-interested in this matter, but really, I don't want community members taking time out of their day and time off of work to come downtown and not having a meaningful experience. Thank you. I'm not criticizing anyone. I just wanted to know, it just seemed like they should have been able to get their questions answered.
Commissioner, I have not yet had my questions answered, so we're still pending a memo on that staff will be providing us before the next hearing, since
okay.
We did have the testimony last time. We asked and were promised that we would get a side-by-side comparison of what's in the old code, what the protections will be now with the setbacks,
for the buffer overlay.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I
don't... But they have an environmental overlay, which...
Stated last week, however, there are other regulations in the buffer zones which this packet proposes to delete, and I'm not yet, it could well be that I will be, but I don't have that information yet.
Okay. Oh, right.
If I can add to that, just to follow on.
Hopeless, yeah. Is basically.
So we're still in the process, is the point.
We do have a memo that we'd like to share with council, so we can share that with you either now or later, maybe after testimony. We've made it available to the public, so the folks have had an opportunity to look that over. And
why don't you pass it out?
Sure, we can pass that out right now.
Why didn't we get it? I've got it in my stuff. It's brand new.
We just brought
while
it
you're
today.
Handing that out, Eric, can I ask you another question? Just to make sure I'm not missing something. So why don't you give it to Carla? I'm sorry, not Carla.
Sue,
excuse me, creature of habit. Eric, you mentioned the affordable commercial space bonus, and I might have been out of the room when you talked about it. So can you just remind me, there's a lot of pieces here that we're taking up to address that issue. PDC is proposing to do some work because they actually own some commercial space, and they're also looking to, within urban renewal districts, provide some resources. There's a bunch of other things. Would you just remind me, and again, I'm sorry if you've already gone over this, could you give me a quick primer on the affordable commercial space bonus?
Yeah, well, this came up during the rewrite of the commercial mixed-use zones, and we gave the biggest bonuses for inclusionary housing because that was the overall priority that everyone kind of agreed was the public good that we were trying to get out of bonuses. But we did include a bonus for commercial space. We call it the affordable commercial space bonus, and this was worked out because we got some testimony that it would be nice to have a clear path for small businesses, emerging businesses, minority businesses that have a harder time breaking into being in the ground floor of brand new buildings. And so when we have substantial redevelopment like we saw on Williams Avenue or on Division, that sometimes that completely changes the character of the retail environment because the smaller businesses really don't have access to that kind of development. And so we did a lot of work with Prosper Portland and other stakeholders to figure out if there was a viable way for us to give a small increment of additional entitlement in exchange for an affordable commercial program dedicated on the as part of the ground floor. And the general answer was we think something is viable, and so we Prosper Portland had a process over last summer to dig into that and figure out what that kind of program would look like. And it is, you're right, they already do a form of this with buildings they're involved with in urban renewal districts, so it seemed like a natural extension of that to allow essentially to buy into that program or something similar to it through a bonus outside of urban renewal districts.
Right, and I'm sorry, maybe this is belaboring the obvious, but it does or does not compete with inclusionary zoning?
It is, we tried to make it not compete with inclusionary zoning by making inclusionary zoning the only avenue where you could get the full bonus. So this does not earn you the full bonus. So if you want to get the full bonus, you effectively still have to do inclusionary housing. But for commercial-only projects that maybe are not going to do housing, this would be one of the few ways to do a bonus that would have a direct community benefit on the ground.
And for which we'd give them a little extra height.
Exactly. So
floor area. And floor area as well.
Right. So Prosper has been working on the detailed programmatic rules of how this would work, and they're presenting that to the Planning Commission later this month.
Okay. Thank you.
If I can go back to the buffer overlay for just a moment, just to elaborate, I think I want to be clear that the standards in the new base zones are not direct replacements of what was in the buffer overlay. We tried to evaluate what was appropriate given what we had done in the commercial mixed-use zones and setting up buffers in those zones, and we looked towards that to emulate standards in the industrial and employment zones. There are kind of a blend between the buffer overlay, the existing zoning, and what we did in the commercial mixed-use zones. And we can go into more detail about that if you'd like to, maybe after other questions or maybe after testimony if you'd prefer.
Commissioner Fritz.
I think just from looking through this memo, I'm going to need a much more detailed explanation because it says here the buffalo, I mean, one of the reasons to standardize it, as we discussed last time, but it says currently the widths range from 25 feet to over 300 feet. If we're exchanging a 300-foot buffer for a 10-foot buffer, I could understand why the neighborhood would be quite upset. So how are you going to walk us through that area by area?
It's tricky because it's very situational. That on balance, we believe we've come up with a package that achieves the same intent, but on a case-by-case basis, you're right, there may be properties that didn't have any regulation of this topic before who are now subject to setbacks in landscaping, or conversely, there could be properties that under the old buffer overlay had a wider landscaping requirement than they will now. So,
so in particular, for with Willamette Heights, since as Commissioner Daly said, we did get such a lot of testimony on that.
Yeah, and in Willamette Heights, again, our analysis is that doesn't matter because it's really the environmental conservation zone that's going to have the controlling effect here.
I would beg to differ, having seen quite a number of environmental reviews where things have been allowed that I would prefer not to have been allowed. And it depends to me on what is their buffer zone now. What is the width of that in comparison with what is the width of the environmental zone? So I'd like some more details on that when we come back next time.
We'll come back with more for that.
Yeah. Thank you.
We can give you more detail on that.
Thank you.
Very good. So that concludes your presentation on the staff amendments. Obviously, you would like a motion and a second to put those on the table. Is that correct?
Actually, Mayor Wheeler, I think we have an amendment package that we gave to you.
The March 21st amendment.
Correct, yes. Correct? And okay. we haven't addressed that quite yet.
Okay, do you want to go through that unless anybody has any questions first?
Yes.
Okay, why don't we go through that, because I know people are patiently waiting to testify.
I don't think council has received this yet, so let me have Sue pass that out to you.
Perfect.
And you may have received it by email, but you don't have a hard copy.
Great, and I promise, folks, we'll get to the public testimony right after this piece.
So what is being referred to now for the benefit of the audience is the staff proposed a package of small additional amendments that are on top of the Plan Commission's recommendation. And
let's work through them quickly because
sure.
They're not the audience. They're my employers.
Right.
And
I've got
to keep them
two quick slides here. Most of these, again, are technical amendments clarifying things such as the types of pedestrian connections in the residential and the commercial mixed-use zone chapters to clarify that those are not public connections. There's some amendments to the drive-through allowances in the CE zone to talk about when a drive-through is considered discontinued. The ones that are highlighted on this sheet and the next sheet are the ones that are really the most significant. 33-130-292, there's a regulation in the commercial mixed-use zones for pedestrian connections on large sites. We've moved the location of that reference to the section that I've indicated, 292, and we've elaborated on that to clarify it. So that's a fairly significant amendment. The upshot of it is that there's really no change in the intent of what was intended in the commercial mixed-use zones, but it's been rephrased. 33-266-110 is highlighted here. That's in our parking chapter. We are updating those parking regulations to be in the commercial mixed-use zones, the Task 5 project, to be consistent with what was adopted when the council adopted inclusionary housing. So we're making the future code consistent with the most recently adopted current code, if you follow my logic on that. So ultimately that change is not significant. It's really implementing today's code there. I'm going to skip down to 33-270-200. We're clarifying that in the planned development bonus areas and commercial mixed-use zones that community design standards can be used for buildings that meet the allowable size and use limits. So buildings that are typically 55 feet or 5 stories or less in height can use community design standards. It wasn't clear that in this particular bonus one could use that, so we're clarifying that you can. On the second page, starting at Chapter 420, really just correcting some code references. We're making some changes to maps in the Gateway Plan District and in the Laurelhurst Plan District to just correct some boundaries due to some zoning changes that happened in the Comprehensive Plan and Map Amendments. We're making a change in the Northwest Plan District to clarify that the maximum allowed floor area in a particular set of bonuses within that plan district is 3-1 overall. And the reason we're doing that is that the way the code had been written, again, it's one of those situations where it referenced the existing zones with the new zones counting floor area differently. If we had left the code alone, we would have allowed much more floor area than was expected to be developed in that area. So this corrects that. Map 575-1 is, again, just a correction of a map title. 852 are a couple of code changes requested by PBOT. One is that it makes the application requirements for transportation demand management consistent with the approval criteria, so it reduces the burden on applicants to demonstrate that they've met or that they're meeting the criteria, and it corrects a code reference. And then finally, in our definition section in 33.9.10, we're amending the definition of floor area ratio to sync up that definition with the practical application of the way we measure that. And that was something that we discussed extensively with BDS to move forward.
Very good. So you would characterize most of these as being technical amendments, and they're brought to you in consultation with other bureaus, BDS, PBOT, et cetera.
Correct.
Very good. I move the technical amendments.
Second.
We have a motion and we have a second. We'll keep that open. All right, folks, public testimony time. So the public testimony that we're taking today is specific to the 2035 Comprehensive Plan, the Code Reconciliation Project, and any of today's amendments that you heard about. When you come up, it's helpful if you could let us know, if possible, about which city title and code provisions you're testifying about. If you don't know, that's fine, don't worry. But if you happen to know it, that's also helpful just because it helps us hone in on the particular amendments that you're discussing. We always have a tradition here, if there are people with young children or people with disabilities or other needs who'd like to come up sooner rather than later, please let Sue know, and she will accommodate you. And with that, we'll take the first three. How many do we have today?
We have eight.
Very good. 3 minutes. Just name for the record. We don't need your specific address.
Well, the first three come up, please. Silas Beebe, Stu Smucker, Sabina Wolfweiler, and they'll be followed by Sam Beebe, Allison Reynolds, and Shane Kwiatkowski.
Quite? Good for you.
Yeah, she got it. She got that.
Obviously not a usual thing.
Is there a process for handouts?
Yeah, just hand them to Sue, and then she'll get them to all of us. My skull's a little thicker, so it's good they're a little thicker for me. Very good. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Hi. I'm here to discuss, I guess it's issue number 33. It's the 2425 Northwest St. Helens Road.
Could you give us your name, please?
I want to first state that...
Could you give us your name, please?
My name is Silas Beebe.
Thank you.
First, wanted to say that Joan Fredrickson, the West District Liaison for BPS, has been very helpful, and Steve Koontz also, and they organized a meeting for the neighbors at Friendly House that I helped to organize, and it was very helpful and informational. And this latest memo that we just saw today would have been great to have at that meeting a month ago. We had the meeting in February, and it was a chance for neighbors to ask questions and learn about this issue. One of the things we learned was this chart that shows the differences between the current buffer overlay and the proposed. And with the removal of buffer overlay, the setbacks drop from 10 to 20 feet to as little as 0 feet from the rear lines and 5 feet from the side lines of a residence. That's a pretty big change. It also would allow, removing the buffer overlay would allow exterior work activities and exterior display and storage as little as 5 feet from residential homes. So we could have a billboard 5 feet from residential homes and exterior work activities like a lumber yard or things like that by removing the buffer overlay. Yes, there's a conservation overlay, but to the neighbors it's not very reassuring that we're just an environmental review away from developing this land so closely adjacent to family homes. I went around the neighborhood and canvassed, knocked on doors, and quite quickly and easily got a petition. It simply says, I'm a resident of Willamette Heights. I'm in favor of retaining the buffer B over zone overlay on the property. 2425 north of St. Helen Roads. So I got 6 pages filled up pretty quickly, and I could double that in short order because there's a lot of streets I didn't even hit. And by knocking on those doors, I also learned that a lot of neighbors along the perimeter, up on Thurman in particular, never received notice. They never actually learned that this was happening and had no idea. The handout I'm handing out is showing that there's two properties that whose property directly abuts the southwestern corner of this lot. And both of those houses are condemned, abandoned, red tagged as uninhabitable because of landslides. And the stories, the news stories about this say that what actually happened was heavy rains reactivated an existing landslide. So what we're concerned about is we're just environmental review away from developing this site with a history of landslides, and then that provides a lot of benefit for the neighbors as a buffer between the industrial area. So we asked for an amendment, a easement, additional overlay, some kind of, if we don't have a chance to retain the buffer overlay, please ask for some other way to protect this site and keep it from being developed because we don't want...
Yeah, that's very compelling testimony, and I think you may have heard from our conversation up here that we are very sympathetic to that, and we're not making any decisions today. And so this is obviously going to continue to be a very live conversation for us. But I'll just say today, your testimony is very compelling. Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you. And thanks to Open Signal, I could see on the monitor that I don't have what you have there in terms of the comparing the old. So, staff, can I get a copy of what he has? Do you know what he has?
It's...
Yes, I'm seeing a nod. They're going to get it for me.
Okay,
great. Thank you very much. I agree. That's what we need to see.
Cool. Thank you.
Thank you for coming in. Thanks for your patience. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Stu Smucker. I'm from Willamette Heights, and I'm here to testify about Title 33 and Title 32, which relates to signs. I own and live at a residential lot that borders the industrial lot at 2425 Northwest St. Helens Road. The draft recommendation of the BPS is to remove the buffer from that industrial lot, and I oppose that. BPS is recommending that sections 33.410.010 and .030 of the Portland Zoning Code be deleted. Those sections set forth the purpose of a buffer, how it is achieved, and where it is most important. It is to be used between non-residential and residential zones when the base zone standards do not provide adequate separation between residential and non-residential uses. The separation is achieved by restricting motor vehicle access, increasing setbacks, requiring additional landscaping, restricting signs, and in some cases by requiring additional information and proof of mitigation for uses that may cause off-site impacts and nuisances. It is to be applied primarily along the edge of a non-residential zone abutting a residential one. 11 of us own residential property along the edge of the industrial St. Helens property. It is my understanding that the buffer was originally placed on the St. Helens property because the city had determined that the base zone standards by themselves did not provide adequate separation between the industrial property and the residential neighbors. It is my understanding that this stemmed, at least in part, from hearings and testimony in 1991. Removing the buffer may provide greater consistency in citywide mapping, but it does not address the underlying reason that the buffer was placed on the property in the first place, or how, going forward, adequate separation is achieved. The BPS also recommends deleting or reducing development standards in what up to now has been buffer zones. The standards cover setbacks in landscaping, structures and exterior activities, motor vehicle access, and radio frequency transmission facilities. The BPS is also recommending deletion of the code section 33410.080 that makes a buffer zone subject to off-site impact regulations of 33.262. Under current code section 3234.020, signs are prohibited in the buffer overlay zone. BPS is recommending deletion of the sign prohibition. From the point of view of residential neighbors, these recommendations are not mere technical changes. The buffer and the city code sections regulating separation, development standards, motor vehicle access, off-site oversight, billboards, and radio frequency transmission towers were put in place for a reason. I submit that those reasons are just as important today as they were when the buffer was first placed on the property. I request that the buffer related prohibitions on sign, motor vehicle access, and radio frequency towers be retained. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon.
Hi. My name is Sabina Wolfeiler, and I've lived at 2125 Northwest 33rd Avenue since 1987. The last time I provided testimony before City Council was almost 30 years ago when Bud Clark was the mayor. And interestingly enough, that testimony was about the same issue and the same property, the buffer zone on 2425 Northwest St. Helens Road. I'm here today to make three requests of the members of the council. First, I ask you to become familiar with the extensive history of this property and its importance as the only separation between our residential zone and the industrial sanctuary below us. Second, I ask you to honor the hard work of your predecessors, who in the late 80s and early 90s crafted a solution that has served all of us well for decades. And they worked hard. It was like a three-year onslaught of meetings and everything. And third, I ask you to make an exception to the map refinement project and retain this buffer designation. I understand that Portland is changing, priorities shift and politicians change, but the geologic composition of this slope does not. Two geologists, Roger A. Redfern and John McDonald, have extensive documentation on file dating from October 24, 1988 to November 22, 1989, in which they both agree, and here I'm quoting, "This site is geologically complex, the reasons being its geologic history, past landslides, and stream erosion." Bud Clark and his city council listened to us and voted to retain the buffer and put in place an environmental overlay as additional protection, and I understand you're keeping that. But this is a geologically unstable hillside and must not have vegetation removed or the toe of the hillside excavated, which was done back in those times. At 7 feet and 11 feet, there are layers of silt which turn to liquid during an earthquake. Our neighborhood has had extensive earthquake preparedness training sessions. Removing protection provided by this buffer puts us all in more jeopardy. Downgrading the zoning by removing the buffer classifications gives owners of property in the industrial sanctuary a distinct advantage over the needs of Willamette Heights residents for clean air, noise abatement, and visual separation from industry. I have a copy of that same thing that Silas has, and according to today's rules, new development and ground disturbance, there needs to be an environmental review within the resource area of the overlay. It calls for avoid, minimize, mitigate impacts to natural resources. The proposed plan, no requirements beyond setbacks. So we're losing out here. Nobody ever refers to the term residential sanctuary. It's always industrial sanctuary. Robert Putnam, who spoke at Portland City Club some years ago, wrote a book in 2003 called Better Together, Restoring the American Community. He devoted an entire chapter to Portland and our impressive civic involvement. The Portland of today is changing in many ways, but the ability to listen to the people should be retained. Thank you for listening.
Can I ask you a question? This is sort of a historic moment. It's 30 years since you've been here. I was doing the math on how many mayors since then and thinking, wow. Mayor Wheeler and I the other day were up in his office looking at some pictures of the old chambers and before the big renovation. I'm just curious, when you testified before Bud, how were we configured? Do you remember?
No, it's the other way.
They were sitting over there.
Yeah.
So the council was over there.
That's not that long, Commissioner.
I was so nervous. I barely remember that.
Well, how do you like the upgrade?
It's lovely. It's lovely.
Yeah, they have the windows all blocked off, too.
Well, thank you very much. And I think you made a really good point about community involvement. And it's people like you who have the capacity to come down on a Wednesday afternoon at 2 o'clock to highlight the issues with this site that perhaps are speaking for other sites whose neighbors are not able to pay as much attention. And so I'm certainly going to be asking staff, you know, what's the policy reason for removing the buffer? Is it, should we be looking at this citywide and if maybe it's a different project? So thank you very much, all of you.
Thank you for listening.
We appreciate your testimony, all of you. We'll see you in 30 years.
She might be back if we don't do what she asks.
Next three, please. Please come up. Sam Beebe, Allison Reynolds, and Shane.
All right. Welcome.
Thank you. I think we have a quorum of the Beebe family here today.
Yeah. We do. Good afternoon. My name is Sam Beebe. Thank you for hearing our testimony. And I would like to talk about Title 33, give feedback on Title 33, and particularly oppose the removal of the buffer B. I'll speak quickly because I think my friends, family, and neighbors already pointed out the points, and as well as Commissioner Fritz. So,
thank you, Sam. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Allison Reynolds, I'm here on behalf of Killian's Pacific, and we're asking for a new amendment today to Title 33. It would be a change to Map 120-7, which is the RH Zone 4-1 mapping. And essentially what happened is that this is an alternative fix for a property that we are proposing that we tried to fix through the map refinement project. Talked with Marty Stockton after you guys considered those changes last week, and she suggested that we provide this testimony as sort of an alternative solution for this project. Killian owns a property at 2525 Northwest Lovejoy, and that property is currently improved with a 90,000 square foot, give or take, medical office building. And the site is currently zoned RH. We had previously, probably about 3 or 4 years ago, asked all the various boards that considered the comp plan to change that site zoning to make that office building a conforming use and a conforming development by either zoning it CM2 or CM3. That change was proposed as a CM1 change under the map refinement project that would not actually cure either of those issues, and so we continued asking for the higher zoned CM options. The neighborhood also did not like the idea of rezoning that site from residential to another option. So today we are proposing to essentially let the use issue go and instead just deal with the size of the development. And as you probably know, under the code, the RH zoning has sort of two different FAR and heights that can apply. Certain areas are mapped for a 2-to-1 RH, where it's essentially a lower density RH version, and others are mapped at 4-to-1 FAR. It would make the development size on this current site conforming if we were to map it for 4-to-1 FAR and 75 feet in height. And so that's the change that we're asking for this property. Just leave it zoned RH, since that seemed to be what might work better here for the neighborhood interests, but still allow the size of the development that's built there to be allowed to be a conforming development through this change.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Do you know if the neighborhood supports that request?
I actually do not know if they support that. I'm not sure that we realized that was an option until I think last week, but we're hoping since the development that's there is roughly the same size and it's currently medical office, we think that their main concerns were traffic, and we assume that if it were a residential development instead, that would probably include less traffic than's currently there.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Hello, my name is Shane Kwiatkowski. This is the first time I've ever been in the room, so I don't know the specific name of the code, but there's an opportunity for different kinds of businesses to be able to be on the ground. What is it, PSC? What was that? You talked about it earlier.
Affordable commercial space bonus.
Awesome, great. I wanted to speak directly to that first, just a little bit of context of my own experience. I don't currently live in Portland. I live in Vancouver. I used to live on Mississippi Avenue, but unfortunately I just got priced out. And so when I'm looking at the changes as far as national and international business investment when it comes to Portland versus Vancouver, something that I think we're not diversifying nearly enough, and part of the gentrification aspect that we don't talk about is that many local companies do not pay good wages. Their wages have not increased for dozens, if not 20 or 30 years. And what I know as someone who's been raised here for 29 years is that it's very frustrating when you don't feel you have the same opportunity of the neighborhood or the local vibe. And it kind of gets to the point, which I'll now bring to an example. I worked at a bakery in North Portland, and it's a shop that says shop local, shop local, shop local. I developed anorexia in the 2 years following, and I lost 65 pounds because my baristas did not tip me. I made 300 or 400 loaves of cookies or whatever, but I was a minimum wage, and between the rent in my place and where I worked, I found it very disturbing that I became so food insecure. And I also was just right above the limit to get food stamps, right? So here I was living in Mississippi, seeing 900 units be developed in a year and a half with people whose incomes dwarf mine by 4 to 5 times. They get to enjoy the oyster bar, they get to enjoy the coffee, but how many people here do? So then that's context for why I think it's important. I know Pike Place, by the time I researched this in 2007 or 2009, they did a study that all state and federal funds for the development of Pike Place Market was met within 3 years. All the businesses within there achieved operating in the black, and the fish market that's on the corner, if you only measured the fiscal solvency of an organization, not compared to digital space, because digital space is not physical space, the ones that throw the fish, by 2009 they were grossing on average